How does a holy God bring sinners into his presence? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson, and my conversation partners are two colleagues from the Walla Walla School of Theology, Dave Thomas and Paul Dibdahl.
I think I would begin by making the point that this is a serious problem of bringing sinners into the presence of a holy God. So the question you raise in my mind is, it raises a profound theological question. How, in fact, does a holy God find a way to come near to sinners without them being destroyed? Not because God is angry, but because God is holy. So and, your question is a fascinating one.
And these sinners, if what we suggested last week is true, that they felt the only way to satisfy this angry God was to give your firstborn child.
Yeah, appeasement of some kind.
And that lingers there, for example, in the book of Exodus. Every animal, every firstborn animal had to be sacrificed. And you had to redeem the human beings, the firstborn human being, with an animal sacrifice.
Yeah.
So there is that method of both responding to the fear of the people and yet nurturing the fear.
Well, you have to work with, I think this is a sense that people already had from their time in Egypt, from the surrounding nations. So God works with that fear, which is already there. I don't know about encouraging it, but at least works with that sense that they already had, and yet is able to draw near to them.
Yeah, so people had to learn that there is a way to come near to God for your redemption, but you cannot come willy-nilly. I mean, I think I see that because the whole mechanism of the sanctuary creates access, but it also maintains distance. When you look at the fact that there are two compartments in the sanctuary, and you also look at the function of the priest.
I think it's valuable to remember, too, that the sanctuary is set up originally in Israelite history. It's set up in the middle of the encampment, so there is that desire, I think, clearly on God's part to be accessible, to be near to everyone. And that maybe is important to remember.
And actually, I don't just think it's important. I think that's probably the profoundest truth about the sanctuary in my mind, Paul.
But what you were mentioning, Dave, about the high priest could only go in once. If you could reconstruct a picture of the sanctuary, you have the most holy part. The most holy object in the Israelites' worship was the table of stones on which the covenant was engraved. Okay? That goes inside the Ark of the Covenant. There is a mercy seat.
In the most holy place.
In the most holy place. And as you mentioned, the high priest can only go once a year, and if he doesn't do it right, that could be the end of him. See? So here you have the Ten Commandments in the Ark, in the most holy place. And then you have a holy place, which is for daily use by the priests.
Yeah,
and then you have a courtyard, see, where ordinary people can come into. And then even you go beyond that, the Levites, the ones who served as priests, their tents were next. And then ordinary people beyond that. So the whole system was designed to bring you into the holiness of God. But it seemed to me that would be just fraught with all kinds of dread and fear.
Except that it also taught you accessibility to God. See, and I want to go back to what Paul said a minute ago. I think it's a profound truth that God, rather than distancing himself from sin, put himself in the middle of it. See? And I think one of the profound lessons of the sanctuary in Old Testament times is that if you have a problem with sin, the direction to resolve it is not away from God, but toward God. And you know what you described, Alden, is precisely the mechanism by which ancient people could come to God and come with a profound sense of awe and respect, but not of abject fear.
But I think of one passage, for example, in the law, Deuteronomy 5:22-33, which describes the reaction Israel after the Lord scared the daylights out of them at Mount Sinai. And I'll just read a few lines here in Deuteronomy 5:22-33, but it comes back again, Paul, which you mentioned when we began recording this series, that today, God's our buddy, we'll go for a walk with him, everything's fine. But if you really try to listen and live into this experience, it's really quite sobering. Verse 22 of Deuteronomy 5, this is after Moses repeats the law again. These words the Lord spoke with a loud voice to your whole assembly at the mountain, out of the fire, the cloud, and the thick darkness, and he added no more. He wrote them on two stone tablets and gave them to me. When you heard the voice out of the darkness, while the mountain was burning with fire, you approached me, all the heads of your tribes and your elders, and you said, look, the Lord our God has shown us his glory and greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the fire. Today we have seen that God may speak to someone and the person may still live. So now, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of the Lord our God any longer, we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living God speaking out of the fire as we have and remained alive? Go near, you yourself, and hear all that the Lord our God will say. Then tell us everything that the Lord our God tells you, and we will listen and do it. The Lord heard your words when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, I have heard the words of this people which they have spoken to you. They are right in all that they have spoken. If only they had such a mind as this to fear me and to keep all my commandments always so that it might go well with them and their children forever. Go say to them, return to your tents, but you stand here by me, and I will tell you all the commandments, the statutes, and ordinances that you should teach them, so that they may do them in the land that I am giving them to possess. You must therefore be careful to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn to the right or to the left. You must follow exactly the path that the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live, and that it may go well with you, that you may live long in the land that you are to possess. God says, you're scared to death? That's good.
Yeah. Have we talked yet about how fear can be motivation for us? And if God is a fearsome being, are you more likely to listen to what he tells you? And maybe to begin with, in God's experience with his people, he starts there so mm-hmm. that they get on the right track, mm-hmm. and over time they come to realize more and more that he's not as scary as they originally thought.
I think you're absolutely right, Paul. You finally come to the revelation of Jesus where it says, you know, here's God. We have touched him. We have seen him with our own eyes. See, but that's a long ways away yet. You don't come with people who believe that child sacrifice is the only way to placate the gods and say, all right, y'all, let's have a party.
Yeah,
it's much more serious than that.
See, I don't know. I find myself a little bit in a different place because I actually think that meeting God would be scary, mm-hmm. in the sense of filling you with awe, not of filling you with horror. I'm not mm-hmm. using scary as, you know.
But the two are related.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
You know, when you are filled with awe, there is a certain deference mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. give to that person or that thing, that you don't just go dashing in there and start grabbing hold. And I think, you know, it will be a profound moment when the human sees God face to face. I think that we will see God as beneficent and loving.
Right.
But I think at the same time, we will be left speechless out of the awesomeness of God.
Yeah. I think that's different from fear, though. I do think it's love, perfect love casts out fear. And
talking about abject fear.
As we experience God as love, then it certainly awe, deference, those other words you used, I'm comfortable with. But
you won't grovel on the ground in front of God scared out of your mind because he's not your enemy.
But it's so amazing in the Old Testament. I mean, there's a New Testament passage that says, you know, God dwells in a light that nobody can approach. But you have incident after incident after incident in the Old Testament where God actually does appear to people, but the reaction of the people is always, wow, I've seen God face to face. And my life is preserved.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating little insight there, Alden. I mean, that people are surprised mm-hmm. by the fact. So what concept of God existed? You know.
Well, if you expect God to be satisfied with the sacrifice of your firstborn child, you've got a long ways to go.
And that doesn't mean he'll be your friend. It only means he'll be appeased, that he won't be so angry.
That's right, yeah. So now there's one other passage which fits into this same story. And I was surprised when I discovered this. There's a beautiful passage that we have often used. It's the Aaronic blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. See? A wonderful blessing. But I notice the lead into this. Now, this is what it says in verse 22 of Numbers 6. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, thus you shall bless the Israelites, you shall say to them. In other words, you don't just go and tell the Israelites this. God speaks to Moses. Moses speaks to Aaron and his sons, and then they finally tell it to the people. See, that layer after layer after layer is so different when we come to the story of Jesus. But even the story of Jesus, when Peter all of a sudden, what did he say? Depart from me, for I am a sinful man. So I think every one of us at some point in our lives, I would think, would want to have that sense of horror that we sinners are actually in God's presence. Am I stating that too strongly?
Well, I don't know that the word horror. I think, you know, what is there that would have both a sense of awesomeness but a sense of joy? I don't know if there's a word that puts
there,
those
there might be surprise that we as sinners are in the presence of a holy and awesome God, and yet we are preserved.
Yeah, which would produce, I think, an enormous gratitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thankfulness.
Well, I would admit, and this may be scary because we don't have time to discuss this, but sometimes I am so overwhelmed by my wife's, by her presence, that I have this mixed emotion. And maybe we could apply that to God. But our time is up. Next week, we're going to talk about the atonement purification offering. My thanks to Dave and Paul for helping us, and to Chad Ofterhaar, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in for the good word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.